This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
In Berkeley, California, although travel around the country to Pacifica and affiliate stations is required. For more information, visit pacifica.org. Pacifica is an equal opportunity employer. KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Kalinske.
I'm Deborah Bell.
And yes, you are Deborah Bell. Let's try that again.
And I'm Deborah Bell.
Okay. Glenn is not here tonight. He's in Canada. I guess he's visiting his family.
Because his mom has a birthday.
Well, that's really good. So I'm substituting, running the board, and we have a pretty exciting show tonight, don't we?
Well, we hope so, if all our guests are going to be here. As many of you know, there's been a controversy this year considering the move of the Pride Parade from the Montrose area to downtown. And there was a survey, and there was some studies done, and there was things that happened, and we're going to take a look at that, the pros and cons, with a representative from Pride Houston and hopefully John Nitchman from the Pom Pom Group, people opposed to moving the parade out of Montrose. We'll be asking some questions about this year's events and the future of Pride. And then we'll be taking calls from our listening audience from 8:30 to 9.
Yes.
So don't call now.
Don't call now, but our phone number is 713-526-5738. You can write that down. And about the bottom of the hour, we'll be beginning taking phone calls, and you'll be able to ask questions so that it's just not Deborah asking questions.
That's right. We'll let you do some of the work.
And in the second hour, we're going to have Dalton DeHart on, who is a community photographer. And Dalton is like, he's like three people, because he's all around the community. And it's pretty amazing how many places he is at one night, and I don't know how he keeps it all sort of straight.
Well, plus he has documented our community.
Yes, absolutely.
And he recently gave a gift of many thousands of photographs to the Gulf Coast Archives and Museum, so we'll talk to him a little bit about that. So stay with us on Queer Voices, July 30th. Do take a look at the moon tonight, because we just passed full moon. It was one of the most auspicious full moons of the year.
Yeah, maybe we'll get to see it tonight.
We might.
And also, of course, we have our regular features, including This Way Out, and we'll be doing some chit-chatting about stuff going on in the community this week.
Oh, good.
Okay. So all that's coming up on Queer Voices.
You like
got your orders,
and I know you got to watch your borders. Yes, I know how I know, for I have been there too, and I live to tell. Something there is, something there is, something there is, something there is. It doesn't love a wall that wants it. And I know good men said they make good neighbors. Yes, I know how I know, for I have built a wall and mended it well. They're marching one by one under a blazing sun, each with a smoking gun shining against the sky. They're marching two by two, marching on me and you, and they will run us to my love, a prayer to Christ. They're marching three by three, marching on you and me. We won't go willingly, give me one kiss goodbye. They're marching four rhythm. Yes, I know how I know, for I have walked the walk and I've seen it all. They're marching one by one under a blazing sun, each with a smoking gun shining against the sky. They're marching two by two, marching on me and you, and they will run us too. My love, prepare to cry. They're marching three by three, marching on you and me. We won't go willingly, give me one kiss goodbye. They're marching four by four, they're almost at the door, and they are bringing more. I think we're gonna die. They're marching five by five, won't bring us back alive. So if we don't survive, well, we gave it our best.
That is Dave Hall, recorded live at the Pride Festival in 2001, and the song Something There Is.
This is Queer Voices.
And this is Deborah Bell. I'm with Nick Barnes. Brines. I always want to call him Barnes because of Ed Barnes. I'm sorry, Nick Brines. And you're with the Pride Committee of Houston. What is your title?
I'm on the Board of Directors.
A Board of Directors. And John Nitschman, who is with Pom Pom, People Opposed to Moving the Parade out of Montrose. And do you have an official title? Instigator?
No, just the person who was able to be here tonight.
We take what we can get on Queer Voices. So when we originally talked about doing this program tonight, it was because there had been discussion about moving the parade from the Montrose area to downtown Houston, and there was some disagreements about whether that should take place. There were some community forums. There were online polls, there were articles written, and the end result is that why don't you tell me, Nick, where are we now with
Absolutely.
The whole controversy?
Absolutely. The organization was looking at all of the options available to us to ensure that we're putting on the absolute best Pride celebration that we can for the city of Houston. We've done no shortage of research, hundreds and hundreds of volunteer hours, lots of committee meetings, task forces, like you said, online polling, and we even did some voting voting on the day of the Pride celebration this year in June 2007. The official vote will take place in August 2007. The board of directors will meet to look at all of the feedback that we've received, to look at the results of the voting, and that's when the official vote will take place, is in August.
Okay, and that vote will be done by the board of directors.
Correct.
They're the only ones that will ultimately have the say-so.
Correct. The board of directors are the legal owners of Pride Houston, so it is up to us to make the final decision. Correct.
Okay. Now, have things changed somewhat after the result of the research? And
I was just looking at the date here. The actual date of the board meeting is August 18th, so that we know that. That will take place at the offices of Pride Houston.
And that's a Saturday.
That
right?
is a Saturday, correct. We picked a Saturday so that it would be accessible. Our website, pridehouston.org, has a calendar.
What time of day?
I cannot remember the time of the board meeting off the top of my head. I didn't bring that with me. But pridehouston.org, the meeting will be announced on our website. And you can also call the offices of Pride Houston to get the exact time. But I do know it's on Saturday, August 18th.
And it is open to anyone to attend?
Absolutely. Our board meetings are always public, and anybody is welcome to attend. I wouldn't say anything has changed. The board has always been in a research mode on this, so we haven't made any decision. We've gotten a lot of feedback on both sides of the issue. I know me personally, I have heard people very adamant on opposed to moving it out of Montrose, and I've heard their concerns and their ideas. I've heard the complete opposite side. I've heard people very passionately about how exciting it would be to try a new venue and to have the event in downtown Houston, and how that's more representative of the city. We've always been in a research mode, and so the board will meet in August to make that final decision.
Okay, but when I said some things have changed, is because we were originally going to have kind of a debate about this decision, and some of the results that have come in are leaning more towards not moving the parade downtown, or at least not doing it this year. So we're going to talk a little bit about the pros and cons still about moving it or not moving it, and then we're going to talk about where we are as far as Pride right now and its future. So you just kind of gave a capsule,
right,
Nick, of the reasons to possibly move it downtown. Give about 3 minutes.
Sure, absolutely. The organization has been looking at how we can best put on an event to really represent the gay and lesbian community and to really showcase what Pride means. Part of the reasons that we started looking downtown is that we have outgrown the footprint that is available to us to put on a Pride Festival of the size that we think the city of Houston deserves. Right now, we're putting on a festival on city streets that are fenced off in a neighborhood. It does limit us to the size audience that we could have at any given time. And mathematically, when you work out our budget numbers, looking at how many attendance could be, it does give us just a set amount of money in order to put on a festival. It means that the level of artists we hire can only be of a certain level. We can't put as much money into the festival because we know that we're limited at how much money we could bring in from the attendance that's available to us. The other reason that we had looked at moving is because we have been getting a lot of feedback from the community. We've tried very hard for many years to be good neighbors. We are taking over the neighborhood, shutting down streets where people live, the local businesses of the neighborhood. We get a lot of feedback each year. We try to be as respectful as we can of the neighborhood and put on a great event. But downtown does allow for many more venues. It has much more parking available for us. There were a lot of reasons that we were looking at downtown. The other reason, too, is I think Montrose, there's great history, great tradition of having a Pride celebration in Montrose. But Montrose is a neighborhood. To me, downtown Houston is really representative of the city of Houston. As gays and lesbians, many of us us live in Montrose. Many of us do not. We live in the Heights. We live in Meyerland. We live in Katy. We live in the Woodlands. And, of course, we want to attract people from all over the state of Texas. We want to be a pride celebration that if you live in a rural area, if you live in Waco or Austin or Dallas, that you can be come together and we can show not only the city of Houston how big we are, but the state of Texas how big we are and how important it is that they know who the gay and lesbian community are. I had heard some comments from people stating that they didn't feel comfortable in downtown Houston. Maybe they're a little nervous about holding hands with their partner. To me, that's all the more reason to be in downtown Houston. If you don't feel comfortable holding your hands with your partner, then we should be there so that you can feel comfortable. To me, I want to be able to hold hands with my partner whether I'm in the Galleria or if I'm on the corner of Westheimer and Montrose.
Okay, and John, how would you counter that?
Well, Deborah, first of all, I know Nick is one of the greatest supporters of Pride. I mean, I don't even know where Pride would be without people like Nick and Jack, so I have enormous respect for what they say. However, why don't we have the parade then up in Kingwood, where I live, or up in Humble, or out in Channelview, or other places, or Galveston? I mean, there is a reason we have it in Montrose, because our Pride parade is not for Galveston, it's not for Bryan College Station, it's not for Waco, it's not for Dallas. It's for our community, and our community is not in those places. It's nice to have an event that brings people in from all over the state. I'm thrilled when I see that people from New Orleans and from Atlanta and other cities come to Houston because we have such a special event here. But they're coming here because they're celebrating our community, and our community is Montrose. It's not Channelview. It's not Woodlands. It's not Humboldt. The other factors are that the Pride Parade, as it is a spectacular event. It draws people because of the amazing reflection it is of the community that it represents, and that's the community here in the Montrose area. I think that what we saw this year, those of us who were in the pom-pom group marching in the parade, who saw that you saw very respectful crowds ahead of us cheering and everything, but when people saw who and what we represented, it was an amazing thing to see the reaction from the crowd. I think equally amazing to that were the number of people who just could not believe. I mean, they truly were coming up to us, even while we were setting up our float. Not one single person came up to us and said, "Why would you be opposed to moving to downtown?" Everybody was coming up to us and saying, "Is Pride really contemplating moving this parade, the thing that means so much to this community and the community and the history of the city, to a downtown area that has never supported Pride?" And even to this year, I love hearing about how downtown is, you know, we could see the rainbow flag flying above City Hall. Well, where has that rainbow flag been for 30 years? Where has it been for the last 30 years of this Pride Parade? It has not been there, and it should have been. If we see that rainbow flag flying above the City Hall of our city and see this downtown truly show that it respects what this parade means and what our community means to this city, let's see it for a few years. Who knows? I might be swayed to say that at that point, it might be nice to see a parade that maybe even encompasses both communities, maybe a bridge between the two communities, a parade that starts in Montrose, ends in downtown, or vice versa. But we're not there yet. This city has not shown that it appreciates what this community is. Why on earth would we want to move something that is so meaningful to the community that we are and move it to a downtown area that has shown no support for this parade since, other than politicians coming and waving to the crowd because they know that we'll vote for them?
Well, one of the things about being downtown, holding hands with your partner, especially on a Saturday evening, who's going to be there to see you do that? I mean, how are we showing Houston the pride in our relationships if there's a bunch of closed offices?
Well, in the areas that we were looking at, and I truly, like John said, there is so much tradition and excitement built around the parade in the Montrose area. This was my 13th year helping to organize this event in Houston, so I have a lot of emotional commitment to this particular event, and I love the tradition of Montrose. I think it would be very hard to duplicate the energy and the excitement that we feel. But it's kind of the chicken and the egg thing of do we wait for downtown to show support, or do we make sure that we are visible so that we can have the support throughout the Houston area. The question that I ask myself, and truly, I'm probably the board member who's the most on the fence with this idea because I have been involved for so long. When somebody asks me, how are you going to vote? I always say, well, if I talk to somebody who's really for moving it to downtown and gives me all the reasons, at that moment I think, yep, I'm voting for it. And then I'll talk to somebody like John who is very opposed to it and gives me all the reason, and at that moment, yep, I'm not voting to move it. So I'm totally on the fence. I'm probably a good person to have here at the debate because I see both sides. But in bringing people to downtown, there is a thriving nightlife community down there. There is a lot of happening around the theater district, around Bayou Place. It's not unprecedented to have events in downtown. Certainly there's other gay events that take place down there. Bunnies on the Bayou is a great example. They have a fantastic event in downtown each year for Easter. The Women's Festival draws a lot of people from our community, and they're in downtown each year. So it's not unprecedented to have events downtown, but I think by being down there, it does say to Houston that we are not living just in a ghetto, that we are more than just Montrose, that we're truly the city of Houston. And by being visible and saying, hey, downtown is for us too, I think in terms of people sitting up and taking notice to what we're doing, I think it would do that. The other thing I think about too is we can continue to deliver the exact same product every year, year after year. Next year is our 30th anniversary of doing Gay Pride in Houston. Very proud that Houston has been supporting an event like this for 30 years. At what point do we just stop doing the same thing over and over? I personally think it would be exciting to shake things up a bit, do something a little bit different, and for the 30th anniversary, be downtown and say, you know what, we are not just Montrose anymore. Sure, many of us live in Montrose, great tradition, but we are the city of Houston, and I think that's what downtown does for us.
Well, you know, a lot of people come along and they park their vehicles along Westheimer and spend time there getting ready. You said parking downtown is better, but doesn't that mean parking in parking garages?
Only a limited number of people actually get to do the tailgating, that I call it, that happens along Westheimer. I love to see that. All the people who come really early in the day and back up their pickup trucks and set up tents and have parties along Westheimer. I would hope that we'd still be able to have that sort of atmosphere wherever we have a parade. But when you're talking about the thousands and thousands of people that come to the parade, most people are parking. And this year we had people in golf carts watching. If you know where the parade is as it goes down Westheimer, we have people that park past West Alabama on the south side of Westheimer and on the north side of Westheimer all the way up to West Gray. Some people are walking blocks and blocks. We have, because we are an umbrella organization, we have people of all ages and we have people of all health related illnesses, and sometimes it's not easy for people to walk that far. It's not easy to be in the sun or on hot concrete and pavement. In downtown, there would be parking garages, so people would be able to park a little bit closer. They wouldn't have to walk as far. For a festival atmosphere, instead of standing on concrete that's been baking in the sun all day, we'd actually have a park with grass and trees, and I think it would make for a little bit more a nice environment in the summertime.
What streets actually are we looking at?
Is it that
area around Bayou Place?
It would be kind of the area around Sam Houston Park, and this is just initial research and looking at what would be available to us. But for a festival, there's two sites: either Sam Houston Park, which is a huge park in downtown Houston with grassy slopes and trees and places for people to picnic. There's also Tranquility Park, which is near City Hall, which has sort of the empowerment of being near the seat of our city government. And then, of course, the streets around City Hall, around the City Library, around the Bayou Place and Theater area. Those were some of the streets that we were looking at as potential for the parade to combine with the festival.
Kind of the area where the international festival is.
Similar, yes.
Well, the survey that Pride conducted, and they had online voting and they had on-site voting, and the results of that were overwhelmingly to keep the parade in Montrose in June. How will that be taken into consideration when this vote comes up?
Very heavily. I think it's very safe to say that the board members are aware of the results of the vote. We've heard a lot of feedback from various community organizations. Many people are very solidly in favor of keeping it in Montrose. So while I want to commend the organization for even looking outside the box and thinking, what if, and doing the research, with the volunteer organization to do the amount of research that we've done, it's pretty incredible the number of volunteer hours that were committed to this. But I do think that the results of the vote will probably lean towards that in August. I think that's a fair statement to say.
Well, Pride started off with a budget of $40,000 in the bank, and there's some questions about the management of the money, because now the organization is $20,000 in the red. Before, it was kind of a tradition that the parade didn't step off until all the bills were paid. So why do you account for this debt, and what's being done about it?
Well, part of the reason this year, unfortunately, we did not have the best weather for our festival. We had based some of our budgeting for the festival on previous year's numbers. If we had had the same attendance at our festival this year that we did last year, there would be no problem at all. Because of the rain during the day on June 23rd, many people did not attend the festival. Those who did, our drink sales, of course, were down because you're wet, so you're not as enticed to buy a bottle of water or beer as you would be as if it was hot. So we did fall short of our revenue projections there. However, even though right now, if you look at our budget, it's in the red, we still have a lot of revenue that's coming in. We have some collections to do from various vendors and sponsors who, per their contracts, they won't pay till the end of August. And the other thing, too, is our organization, the board, is already working with corporate sponsors to begin identifying their support for next year and recommitting them for the events next year, particularly because it's our 30th anniversary, where we want to get their support early. So we expect to have that problem sealed up. Our fiscal year officially ends on August 31st, so we'll have it cleared up before then.
Well, how much did the festival cost this year, and how much did it bring in?
Oh, I wish I had those numbers in front of me. I did not bring them with me this evening, so I wouldn't even dare to say a number, because if I'm off, I don't don't want to be held accountable for that.
Come back to bite you.
Yes, exactly.
Well, the festival, of course, it's just been about 3 years that it started growing to be such an integral part of the whole day's activities, but it's never made any money in the past. Why was the outcome of the festival even a factor in deciding the budget and expenditures for Pride?
We budgeted the festival for the last few years to be a break-even commitment for us. The parade is certainly the event that we're most known for and our most popular event. What I love about the parade is it's a great showcase for the community. You can see a wide variety of organizations. You can see a wide variety of people, all races, all genders, all ages. What the festival allows, and why I think the festival is important to our organization, is it's not just a showcase. You're not just watching a parade, but you actually get to interact. It gives organizations a chance to tell what they do and to sign up potential members. It gives us a chance to showcase gay and lesbian artists. It gives us a chance to really let the community network with one another and socialize in a festive atmosphere where we can have that celebration of Pride in that festival atmosphere. And then the parade, to me, is the icing on the cake. It's the big bang at the end of the day that we really show Houston who we are. are. So we have put a lot of work, energy, dollars into building the festival. As with any event, it takes a few years to get it solid and grow the support. And we're learning as we go. Each year we learn what we need to do and not do to put on a good festival. This year, again, we did lose some money on the festival, but if we had broken even per our attendance projections that we were expecting, that we wouldn't even be in the situation that we're in now. But having been with this organization for 13 years and knowing where we are financially, I know this is something that we'll crawl out of quickly. It's going to make our organization stronger. Our board members are extremely committed to moving forward and making sure that we put on a great celebration for our 30th anniversary in 2008.
Well, there were two staff members, one a director of operations and one a development director, and I understand they now have been released from employment. What happened there? I mean, you have someone that's a development director, but did nothing got raised, or?
Well, we hired two staff people earlier this year. Because of our financial situation, we had to be responsible as board members and make some tough decisions about what is the best use of our money at this time. We have very strong board members who are stepping up to fill in for the roles that those individuals were playing. And really, when you look at the overall budget and where you can cut to make sure that we stay solvent so that we are a successful organization, that was the first area to go. We did have a director of development. She hadn't been on board with us for many months, but I, as a board member, one of the roles that I have played for 13 years is to be in charge of fundraising and corporate sponsorships. I took a little bit of a backseat this year because I've been doing it 13 years, and frankly, I was ready for a little bit of a break. I am back on board. I'm really going to be filling that role on a volunteer basis. I'm personally meeting with our corporate sponsors and recommitting them. So the director of development role exists, but not in a paid position, in a volunteer position. And for where we are as an organization right now, that's what fits us best.
So if people wanted to get in touch with you at the office, they'd be likely to find you there?
Yes. I'm going to be keeping regular office hours at the office. We have a great volunteer, Mike Kelly, who's our office manager. He keeps regular office hours. The phone mail is checked regularly. Our email is checked regularly. Our P.O. box. So we're operating as normal, but on a complete volunteer basis. And that's what the reason I probably keep volunteering year after year with this organization is the level of commitment for the people who join. They truly live and bleed for Pride, and it's really heartwarming to see, and people are stepping up to the plate, and they give their hours, their money, their time. There's nothing more valuable than giving your personal time to an organization, and we've got a lot of people doing that right now.
Well, I do want to ask John if he has any additional questions before we go to the phones, but just a couple of things. We never got a press release from Pride here at KPFT, even though we're one of the media sponsors. And I heard of some other media outlets that said they never received a press release. Press releases were not on the website. Could that account for some of the lack of outreach?
You mean press releases, pre-event press releases? Is that what you're speaking of?
Right, from Pride.
Yeah, if I had to pick the area that we fell down the hardest in this year, it would definitely be our marketing. As a volunteer organization, we do have chairs of various committees. One of those is our marketing committee. We had our volunteer chair position turnover not once, not twice, not three times, but four times.
And why was that?
There were different reasons. One person moved away. One person had family obligation. There's just, when you're dealing with volunteers, that's kind of par for the course. It happens every year. There's committees where somebody, for some reason, work, family, personal, cannot follow through with their commitment. We usually have enough volunteers in place to where it's a quick hiccup that we can recover from. With marketing, it was like everything that could go wrong went wrong, and we didn't have a professional person with a lot of marketing experience that was volunteering with us. So a lot of that we were pretty amateur in our marketing this year, and this is the area that we were the weakest in. But if any listeners out there
have marketing
are great
skills.
At public relations or marketing, just go to pridehouston.org. We'd love to meet with you.
So do you think that Pride will hire staff in the course of this year before the 2008 parade?
I would say in the future. I would hesitate to say in the course of this year, because it's going to depend a lot on our financial position. For years, we have been a 100% volunteer organization. We had the luxury of having some staff to help us through this year. In the future, I would love to see us be able to have staff to help us through again, but that could be a few months or perhaps even a year away. I hesitate to say it would be immediate, but hopefully in the future.
So, John, do you have any additional questions?
Well, I would say that, again, with all due respect to Nick and the amazing work he's done, that if George Bush needs a new press secretary to replace Tony Snow, he'd be perfect. we're talking $40,000 budget, and to be $20,000 in the hole is unforgivable. I cannot imagine that. You cannot blame that simply on the weather or the Pride Festival. The festival has, it's been a nice event. I've been to it the last few years. Nice event. Some cities make themselves lean towards a festival as the big event. Atlanta, for example, several cities. Other cities, Sao Paulo, 3 million people for a parade, not for a festival. Sydney, the festival is nothing. The parade is what shows on television, the big event. This city has simply made its connection to the parade. It always has been that. You know, a festival might be a nice event to try. Try it there in downtown. See what happens. I mean, yes, we have some events in downtown, and that's failures of our downtown and the city in terms of supporting the neighborhoods of this city and being very supportive of what happens in those neighborhoods. We don't have places in Montrose for a lot of those types of events, and that's one of the reasons why the Gay Men's Chorus and the Boys Club and everything have their events in downtown. Try a festival in October. See how it works. I mean, if it really turns out to be a fabulous event, then who knows? But don't do something so drastic as to take something so meaningful to a community and not expect the response they got this year. Okay? I mean, that's unbelievable. I've chaired two national organizations, and I cannot imagine being so absolutely up for, you know, being the cheerleader, the one just taking an event and saying, we're going to do this no matter what, and make it seem like it's a done event, and not expect the result that they ended up getting this year from the community, which was absolute 75% opposition to moving it, both from place and from the date. That's what happened, and that's what's going to happen at this point until Pride comes and comes forward to the community with clean hands and says, we need something that really reflects what this community wants. And when they have that, then maybe somewhere down the road it'll be time to have an event that encompasses both communities. But we're not there now.
Well, we're talking with John Nitschman, who is with the people opposed to moving the parade out of Montrose. Try to say that without popping so many P's. And Nick Brines, who is with the Pride Committee. He's on the board and been with the organization 13 years. Gosh, I can't even believe I've known you that long. Because, you know, he's one of those people that has a picture in his closet that is getting older or something, because he's not. And so before we open up the phones, let's just set the groundwork here. You need to turn your radio off. When you're holding, waiting for your turn, you'll be able to hear what's on the air. Keep your questions or your comments succinct. We're going to give everyone probably about 3 minutes. So if you have a comment or question about this year's event or the possibility of moving the parade, you can call 713-526-5738. Give us a chance to answer the phone. We'll put you on hold and get to you as soon as we can.
Nobody.
That is Judy Small, influenced by Queers, from the album Let the Rainbow Shine.
This is Queer Voices.
And we're having a conversation about Houston Pride Celebration, the festival and the parade. Some things that didn't go so good this year. Kind of trying to figure out what those things are so that they can be corrected. The controversy about moving the parade and the festival to downtown Houston rather than keeping it in Montrose. And we're opening the phones at 713-526-5738 for your questions or comments on whichever side of the issue you are. If you have some question about something this year, you can call in 713-526-5738.
Isn't it 713-526-KPFT if they really want to make it easy?
If they're those alpha people,
yes,
those that
exactly.
have to do the alphabet, that always confuses me. Yes, you can call 713-526-KPFT. And we are having a phone light up. We don't usually do call-ins on this program, so sometimes it takes a little bit of adjustment for people to realize what's going on. No, we're not asking for money tonight. We are asking for your input to the program on Queer Voices. Pride Houston. And what has happened with the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender? It has disappeared.
Oh, no.
From the shirts.
It's definitely part of our organization. When you go to the website, I always say Pride as shorthand because I've been doing it for so long. And I used to say GLBT, and sometimes I get ugly looks at that. So I use Pride as shorthand. Sometimes I use queer because I feel
like I think we should make
like
it queer.
Isn't it?
I think it should be queer pride. Thank you.
I like it. I know some people think that that's negative, but to me, we can take that word back. And
that's right.
I like the word queer. It says everything. And when you even when you say GLBT, then if you're, for example, San Francisco now.
I always say, I'll have mine with avocado.
They are GLBTI. SQ, which is gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered, intersexed, straight friendly, and questioning. So it's ISFQ added on to GLBT. It becomes alphabet soup.
Yeah, I think that Pride has become kind of a shorthand, but I do think that on the merchandise or whatever we need to, I mean, even the year that the slogan was say it out loud, it was like, what are we saying? Because it wasn't there. And having my own history with Pride, I thought to make sure that we even had it be gay and lesbian. So, okay, we do have a caller on the line. The name is
Lee.
Hi, Lee. Do you have a comment or a question?
Well, we'll let you guys deal with it. But the way I would put this, I appreciate everything that's being done there, and I support you people. I'm hetero, and everybody needs their own space. But my thing for you to think about is, look what happened to the Westheimer Art Festival when they took it away from the community.
Good point.
And how destructive it was, and how fragmented it's gotten.
I'd love to comment on that one if I could.
That's yours. I'll hang up and let you guys deal with it. I want to hear what everybody's got.
Thank
to
you,
say.
Lee.
Oh, thank
Bye.
You. The problem with the Westheimer Streets Festival was they didn't have a choice in leaving. They were a lot of people didn't know this, but they were a for-profit entity that was putting on an event, and they really didn't step up to the plate. Pride Houston works very hard to make sure that our parade, that we pick up the trash, we provide the infrastructure necessary for the number of people we bring into the neighborhood. So we have not been asked to leave, and we hope we never are. If we ever do leave, we want it to be on our own accord. Westheimer Street Festival was forced to leave because they really did not step up to the plate, and it was a business venture that was in it for the money. We are in it to showcase our community to Houston. I do agree that having the event on Westheimer, though, there is a feeling and some tradition and just a culture that's almost almost impossible to duplicate on something like Allen Parkway, for example. So I do agree with that part of it.
And I'd just throw in that, you know, I mean, I grew up in Humble, up in Forest Cove, and the Westheimer Festival was something that we looked so forward to twice a year because it was like leaving reality. There was nothing like it. And there were people from Dallas, San Antonio, New Orleans, again, that came to our city. They came here because they had nothing in those places that could match it. And so I don't know all the politics. I have been around. In fact, I remember one of the organizational meetings that Pride had to discuss the wisdom of moving to downtown, which incidentally was so overwhelmingly opposed to moving that I left that meeting that day believing there's no way in hell anybody here would ever consider moving this parade out of Montrose. But at least that was... Could you imagine having that festival, the Westheimer Street Festival, anywhere else? Could you have had that in the Heights? Could you have had that in Spring Branch? You couldn't. There's only one neighborhood that could have had that event, and we lost it. That's one of the amazing things about Montrose is how resilient this neighborhood is, how it always comes back from what seemed to be attacks to try to turn it into something it isn't. It always comes back and shows its true colors, and it never shows its colors more than the GLBT Pride Parade
rainbow
every
flag.
Year.
Well, for someone who's been hanging around the Montrose since she was 16 and who's almost 58 years old,
I don't believe
I've seen
you
a lot
nuts.
Of changes, and this is a dye job. There's plenty of silver under here. The Westheimer Festival was originally an art and crafts mm-hmm. festival, and it was very much from the community, and it was, you know, it was
organic.
Back in the hip. It was very organic.
Very organic.
And it was the hippie days, and
iguanas,
they still have those, the snakes and the iguanas. It was great fun, and the art colony people broke off and now do a thing in Memorial Park, which I think is pretty successful as far as that, but it's a separate thing, a separate kind of energy. And then, as you said, the other side of it is that someone decided they were going to make some money, and that's what happened. And I always think, though, that if downtown, if the city government said you have to move the parade, that we'd be fighting them tooth and nail.
That's right. Exactly.
Well,
right.
We do have another caller who's on the line.
Linda.
Hi, Linda. Do you have a question or a comment?
I have a comment. I'm a regular schmo, been in Houston my whole life, and I actually marched in the parade this year, and I didn't get any information as to the festivities of the day, and I'm wondering how the word's going to be gotten out next year.
I think that's a great comment, and that's what we want to work on, is to make sure that the event has as much media attached to it as we can. Our organization for years relied on the local gay and lesbian publications. Unfortunately, because of a number of reasons, we're down to really just a handful. Some have very targeted readership, such as those that target the bar crowd, I call it, or the party crowd. They're great publications for that audience, but it doesn't reach a wide audience. Outsmart Magazine is a fantastic award-winning publication. I love it. Unfortunately, it comes out once a month, so the news is not quite as current. It's a much different type of publication than a weekly or a daily paper. And we have to figure out a way to change with the times and make sure that we are working with the daily and the weekly media that exists. There's not daily, weekly media that targets the gay community as a whole. We need to work with the daily, weekly publications that target the entire city of Houston. I have a meeting tomorrow afternoon at 2:30 with the Houston Chronicle, as an example. So we're hoping to do that. We're negotiating with the Houston Chronicle to have an insert in their paper to promote Pride for next year.
Yeah,
so.
They were one of the official sponsors, and in 2006 they ran articles almost every day for a week mm-hmm. concerning GLBT. John, do you have any comment about that?
Well, kind of the same thing. I mean, those are really, in a lot of ways, failures of the entire community. I mean, the city, the paper, the way in which we've allowed ourselves as the fourth largest city in the country. I don't think there's a city of our size in the world that doesn't have a weekly GLBT press of some kind that comes out there where we can keep up with events. That's something where we need to work as a community, you know, to fix that, because that's horrifying that we don't have some way of knowing what's happening each weekend, what's happening around the community. I was disappointed this year, too, because it seemed like, you know, even the article on the Pride Parade, I don't remember what it was, but it was very inconsequential. It didn't really seem to really say anything about the event itself. And that's
lame.
Yeah, and that's great to know that y'all are working with the Chronicle to do that, because I do think the Chronicle has been very supportive of our community.
The numbers seem to be down as far as attendance, plus there seem to be fewer events in conjunction with Pride. So we do have, thank you for calling, Linda. We do have another caller waiting.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi, my name is Leah, and I just had a suggestion. Maybe y'all can try to talk to other festivals or other similar events around the city throughout the year, you know, the organizers, and try to switch ideas with them and see kind of what they're doing and learn a few things from them. I know, for example, the Greek festival, they're always very well organized. They have various events, and they pretty much are successful every year. That's all I have to say.
Thank you for that suggestion. Do you want to give a little history on that, though?
Sure. This year, for the first time, we reached out to the organizers of the International Festival. And if you would think that would be something we would have done before this year, but we made some great inroads with them. We're actually sharing some resources. Rather than rent expensive equipment that we use once a year, we can borrow equipment that's already been purchased for other festivals in town. The International Festival is probably the granddaddy of all festivals in Houston. I think it's probably the largest and extends for the most number of days, but the Greek Festival is a great idea. That's held right here in Montrose, and working with the Greek Orthodox Church and talking to the other festivals. We do work with the Art Car Parade. We share some resources with. We do reach out to some, but certainly, the more we can talk to people that do what we do, the more we can learn.
And then there's also InterPride. You want to...
Sure. InterPride is the international organization of Pride organizations. Each city that has a Pride organization has a separate nonprofit entity, but we all share resources through regional and international conferences. So the smaller rural communities that do Pride, large metropolitans, and then internationally, people can come together and share ideas. And it's a great way to learn what people are doing in other cities. Sometimes we share resources such as celebrity artists, like we can make sure if they're performing in Atlanta on a Friday night, we'll get an airline sponsor and then have them in Houston on Saturday night, and it keeps our costs down. So we do some networking and some sharing with other cities with their Pride celebrations as well as much as we can.
Thank you for that suggestion.
Deborah, I'd just throw in that, you know, I do hope that if Pride speaks with the International Festival in downtown, that they listen carefully to the fact that when they move that parade from downtown to the Solis area near the Astrodome, they very nearly killed the very biggest event, you know, the city has each year, the International Festival. It's still recovering from it. I mean, the crowds are nowhere where they used to be. It's not even close to the, you know, field that it once had, and hopefully it'll get back there. But that move just about killed it, because people weren't going to support an event where it didn't fit. And our Pride Parade does not fit in downtown right now, so I'm hoping that they will learn from that example.
When I was involved as co-chair for 2 years, I used to tell Jack, I said, you know, even if we didn't do a thing, there were going to be tens of thousands of people that would just show up and line up along Westheimer, like the lemmings, you know, they just know. Well, we do have another caller on the line. Do you have a question or comment?
Is this me?
It's you.
Okay. I had a question.
And who are you?
Craig.
Hi, Craig.
Hey. A question and a comment. First, a disclaimer here. I'm not a part of the gay community. However, I have an opinion on many things. About moving the festival, I don't know that that would be a particularly good idea. In fact, I'm inclined to think it might be a bad idea. I think a couple of examples have already been cited on this program. And in part of this discussion, I'm hearing the one gentleman was talking about legal ownership of the parade's name, I guess. What I'm hearing, I think, is what has happened to the Martin Luther King Jr. Festival Parade and how it's been split into two different things. And I don't think that's been particularly good for the African-American community. And I'm concerned that this may indeed happen in Houston's gay community, and I just don't think it would be good for the community for that to occur. And the comment, I guess, so I guess I'd like y'all to speak to that. And the other thing that I had to say was, moving the Westheimer Street Festival, yeah, I just don't think it's the same thing anymore. It changed the complexion of it completely. However, Bayou City Art Festival is a wonderful, wonderful venue, and it has just dynamite, world-class artists in it now. And I'll just hang up and listen.
Thank you so much, Craig.
Thank you.
So we just have a few more minutes here, so let's give your wrap-ups.
Well, I'll do that, and then I'll answer to his and give Nick a chance
okay.
to respond to mine. Absolutely correct. That's just, you know, I mean, I love Houston with all my heart. I've had chances to live all over the world, and I've seen some of these magnificent parades. I was in Sao Paulo last year, saw 2.5 million people. I've never
Amazing.
Seen anything like that.
Yeah.
Toronto's Pride Parade. I got there in the 6th hour, 25 people deep. I saw Muslim families fully clothed with their children watching a parade that had already gone on for 6 hours, and it was no less fanatic at that hour than it was in the first hour. Some cities gravitate to parades. That's what Houston's gravitated to. I would love to see Pride make Pride a year-long event. Why does it have to be one weekend in summer? That's always going to be the granddaddy of everything. Why not have a Latin festival, Latin Pride festival at some point in the year? This city's 50%
Latin. Or Black Pride like they do
Black
in D.C.
Pride, Asian Pride. I mean, why can't we have something that encompasses the full year, all kinds of events? Because we know here in Houston we have a community that beats any other community in the state, in this part of the country, if not the country. This is an amazing place, and we have reason to celebrate Pride all year long and not just at one time. My biggest concern is that's what's going to happen. This effort to, you know, almost like take the identity away from the very few communities that we have in the city that have developed a true identity, and which communities in this city can absolutely say they have an identity like Montrose. Everywhere I go in the country, I've been all over this country, and I've heard people, when I tell them about Houston, they ask about Montrose. They don't ask about River Oaks. They don't ask about Westbury. They don't ask about Bel Air. I'm sorry, they don't. They ask about Montrose. They don't ask about downtown. Okay, and they do it because that's where this community is located. We've done so much to establish an identity. Let's not take that identity away at some point that's too early for it to leave. Let's do it at a time when this city truly, for the first time ever, shows that it values this community. Not just values it for our votes and shows with people waving at the parade.
Our consumer
truly,
dollars.
Exactly. Values our community and our parade and what it means to the city. Let's see several years of that, and maybe that's a time when we can bridge something that goes on to downtown.
Okay, and Nick, you have about half a minute.
And
in that, because I am concerned about the future of Pride, mm-hmm. let's make sure we give contact information.
Absolutely. That's how I would love to end, is Pride Houston is made up of volunteers. It's made up of people. We're not just some nameless, faceless organization. The opinions that and the events come out of ideas from our volunteers. So our website, pridehouston.org, or you can call the offices of Pride Houston at 713-529-6979. That's a great way, and if you have ideas, if you'd like to be a part of an organization that is vibrant and exciting and puts on one heck of a party, it's a great organization. And real quick, he mentioned about doing year-round events. We have a new subgroup within our organization called Pride in Action. It's for people who want to maybe just volunteer for one or two events a year. We're going out into the community and volunteering for non-gay events, like planting trees at Arbor Day or feeding the homeless, wearing t-shirts that say gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered Pride, so that we can make sure we're visible year-round, not just in the gay community, but in Houston, so that we become faces, and I think that's going to go a long way towards more acceptance. So
make Pride be what you want it to be.
Absolutely.
By being part mm-hmm. of it.
PrideHouston.org. You can
and
volunteer there.
Thank you, Nick Brines and John Nitschman, for being with us on Queer Voices.
Thank you.
Thank you.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
Love dancing to the world. She's laughing in my head and dancing in my dreams. Best of girls like a fox on the hunt. She do everybody wants or she have a bad card. No, not fighting.
That is Christy Claxton.
This is Queer Voices.
And you're listening to Queer Voices here. It's 9:06 p.m. here in Houston. Beautiful evening. It's not raining for once. Isn't that interesting?
Yes, it is.
Well, speaking of raining, you know, you have to get around town. We're talking to Dalton DeHart, who is the community photographer and really, in a sense, a historian for our community. And I've certainly seen you at many events, and I don't go to as many as a lot of people do, but I know you're just about at every event that goes on in the community and events outside the community also. It's amazing. I guess my first question is, how do you know all this stuff, and how do you get around to all of it?
Okay, I get emails. People email me and ask if I would be available to come to various events. I get phone calls. People see me at all the other events, and I jot down the dates and things that are going on. And then I look at the publications and get some there. But mostly personal contact and
right.
emails and that sort of thing.
Well, and people usually pull you aside at an event and say, well, this event's coming up and stuff.
Yes.
And it's probably you're the one person that people don't forget to tell, to ask, to come to an event.
That may be true.
Yes, because
true.
You're there everywhere. How did you get started in taking pictures?
Okay, I've taken pictures pretty much of my life with the lens thematic and that sort of thing. When I was in Illinois, I was going to grad school at Northern Illinois University, and at that time I was working in some continuing education as well, and so I started taking some photos for a continuing education program, and then I decided, well, probably I could use a 35mm camera, so I purchased one and started taking those. And then in 1980 I came back to Texas, to Houston. My mother passed away, and started teaching part-time at St. Cinna College in Pasadena, and did all of those photos around the college. I did basketball photos for the national championship boys basketball, and did all that sort of thing. And then finally, I guess in 86 and 87, some of the friends at the college had mentioned some things going on in the community, and I said, well, yeah, I'd be glad to go. And so I came down and joined a couple of organizations and started taking photos here and there. And then all the fundraisers primarily, started asking me to come to. And then I started giving my photos for use in various publications. I had done Houston Voice until they stopped publishing. I did all their photos, and currently I'm continuing to do Outsmart magazine photos and Jim. I'm doing some of Jim.
You did
as well.
This week in Texas also, right?
Yes, I did some in for Twit, and sometimes I do I give Alex some, since he does those, and he gives me some if I don't make an event. But I do make most of the events, and I put it on my Palm Pilot, and I have a whole list of events going on. Usually, I don't know, I guess maybe 400 plus a year I do.
Yeah, well, at least,
minimum.
Yeah.
And usually shoot, since I went digital, I shoot over 100,000 images a year.
Wow. Wow.
So,
and you have a website now?
I do have a website, www.daltondehart.com, and I have, I think, nearly 700 events out there, over 250,000 pictures on it, and just do photos everywhere. In fact, on July the 7th, 2007, the big wedding date for everybody, Betty Bastanka, with whom I've taught and known for 35 years or so, her daughter got married, so I wasn't the main photographer, but I went out to St. Martin's Episcopal Church and took pictures inside the church without the flash while the main photographer was in the back. And then a big reception over at the Grand Plaza Hotel, and I shot about 1,200 images, I guess, and pared those down to 805 to get to them. So that was the biggest event and one of the nicest events I've done in a long time. But I also do HRC and Black Tie Dinner and Macho Softball League. I do all their photos. And then I just do every other birthday party. Huey Long, the African-American chap that was in the band from, he turned 92, I believe, and I went to the Heights and took pictures of his birthday party up there at one of the art galleries. Do a lot of art openings. And just as I say, people call me all of the time and say, could you do this and could you do that? And since I consider myself an equal opportunity photographer,
right.
Shoot everything.
Everything. Well, and certainly you must put a bunch of your own resources into doing this.
I have. In fact, over the years, I've thought that I could probably have retired 15 or 20 years earlier than I did if I hadn't spent between $3,000 and $12,000 a year of my own money photography for close to 20 years. Last year, I think it was the first year, I think I just about broke even in photography.
Wow. Well, but digital makes it a little bit easier.
It is much easier. Yes, it's much easier to get it on the website. And people, I send a lot of images to people over the email. I do sell enough to, now to break even on my website. But that was never my motive for doing it.
Yeah. Well, the history, I mean, the history that you have documented is just incredible because, and it's just as we said, you know, you've seen publications come and go, but you basically have the history of this community in pictures that for, in the early years, we don't have.
Mm-hmm. I know it. That's true. Yeah. In fact, mine started about 86 and 7. And since then, when I started, I was on roll number about fewer than 2,000 rolls of film I'd shot. And then when I stopped using film, I had shot 12,485 rolls of film. And since then, I've shot another 250 to 300,000 images. So I now have probably around 700,000 images. In the community, I expect I have maybe 650,000 pictures.
Wow.
And everything from Ellen Cohen winning her election that we all
are
happy about.
Yes, yes.
And Mayor White and Sue Lovell and Anise, all of the ones that I see you there too, of course.
Yes.
Many of the events.
Yes. My joke to Dalton is I'm going to start charging you to take my picture. Well, and you know what? I mean, probably the most proudest publication we have ever in this community is Outsmart.
Right.
I mean, they've done a fabulous job of putting a publication together that serves the community and it serves, you know, the high end and the low end, and there's good articles in there. But I think what really makes it distinguishes it is the pictures.
Yeah, it does have beautiful photos.
Yes, yes. I mean, all I think about is, well, if I ever remember to take a picture, just snap it. But, you know, the fact that you do the settings and stuff like that. And I actually had an experience earlier this year when the Chronicle did a story on me where they took me down to the park and they did all this type of stuff. Well, you sort of did the same thing for Outsmart for the Grand Marshal picture,
right,
which I thought
right.
was, you know, I mean, that takes time and effort to do that.
That really does. Now, Outsmart is, of course, an incredible publication, and Ann Siever did an article on me in 2000, Dalton's Social Year, in which she talked about all these events, and we
took
pictures from all those events, and she did, I don't know, a 6 or 7 page spread, and she went to 2 events one night with me, and I had about 3 others, and she said, well, I'm going to let you go to the others, and I think 2 is enough for me in one night, but we'd gone to various events and introduced her to various people. And
well, you really seem to be able to, covering all these events, really be part of a lot of the community, because our community is very split up and there's so many different things going on, from, you know, the HRC dinner to drag, you know, Queen, you know, and the bar events, and the, you know, it's just amazing of that, and the collection that you must have must be incredible.
It is. As a matter of fact, I've already given some to GCAM, Gulf Coast Archives Museum, but they're going to get all of mine, and I'm in the process of trying to get the first 12,000 rolls digitized
so
that I can give them DVDs, because right now they occupy a large part of my little condo there. The whole wall is covered with packets of photos numbered from 1 to 12,485, and then since then the DVDs up through. I'm now actually on number 14,192, and from going to digital, of course, I always had each roll numbered with one, but now every roll number is an event.
Right. Okay.
For example, for Nessa's wedding reception, so forth, I've got 805 pictures. For
Pride is a
party.
Big one.
Pride, I have 1,200 pictures. No, I have nearly 2,100.
Wow.
And from the Jungle Party, I have, I think, 1,260. And all of those. Now, each event might be 1,000 photos instead of 38.
Right,
It was in a row.
Yeah.
So that's why I have so many of those. But, yes, I enjoy it, as obviously you can tell.
and meet many wonderful, wonderful people, from Louis Weekend to Mayor White events to all of the fundraisers, and just did Annie's List over to Denise Parker's the other day. They're getting ready, geared up for 2008.
Yes.
Election.
And Anissa's, you know, we've got this election, but Anissa's definitely gearing up to 2009.
Right.
When hopefully she's going to run for mayor.
Right, right, exactly. And I'll have a few thousand pictures.
Oh, sure, yes, yes, yes.
And,
so do you ever contribute to some of the other publications outside of the community?
I have. I did some circuit, some pictures from the jungle, went to one of the Circuit Noise or something like that that I didn't even know existed.
Right,
but,
right.
They do, and then sometimes I actually did some for A Bear's Life, I think was the name of the publication, from a deal that I did. So people contact me. One time I had a photo for the architectural magazine at Rice University. They took one of my pictures from the corner of Montrose and Westheimer, and they used that. So, and then the travel magazine, I provided pictures for them on several occasions. So, yeah, people email me and say, could I get a picture of this, that, and the other? I know that you're the only one that probably has one.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
And I do. I have pictures of pretty much everybody over the last 20 years, anyway.
So what are some of the favorite things that you like to go to?
Of course, I like Montrose Softball League. I love the sports. Softball is just one of my favorite because it's just so much fun because they go to play and have a good time. And unfortunately, this year it rained a great deal, and the last two times were rained out. HRC is a marvelous gala. Black Tie Dinner is a great gala. I do After Hours pictures, too, and BCBC. They're wonderful. And then Theater on the Stars, we do the Out at Touch that Outsmart Magazine sponsors. I do photos for them. And Act Out at the Alley Theater, which is another event that I like to do. Mukuru, AIDS Foundation Houston, Ronnie Waters does that. It's a musical grouping, and they do wonderful programs, and I've shot pretty much.
So how much of this do you ever get to, like, just sit down and enjoy an event rather than working an event?
You know, people ask me that all the time, and they tell me, say, now, I want you to come to my party. I want you to come to this event, but I want you to enjoy it. I want you to leave your camera at home, and I want you to enjoy it. And I tell them, if my camera doesn't come with me, I don't...
You feel naked, huh?
I do. Well, yes, because for me, that's sheer joy. I thoroughly enjoy it, the mixing and mingling and knowing all these people, and most of the time they want their pictures taken. And I, in fact, I just came from a Cafe Adobe having dinner, and the assistant manager said, are we going to get some of these pictures? Because there was a whole group there, and about 12 of us, 11 or 12 of us, and I took some pictures because there were several people from Columbia and friends. And then the assistant manager said, are you going to bring these pictures back to us? Because they like to put them on the board. I said, yes. He said, well, there's a person here I'd like to have my picture taken with. There's a beautiful woman back there. So I said, yes, I'll be glad to take your photo back there. So that sort of thing is a lot of fun because people enjoy having pictures taken.
Yes.
I enjoy taking them. So my joy is in taking them, and theirs is in enjoying them once I've taken them. So it works out really well. So,
well, the fact that we have less publications out, but there's tons of websites. I'm sure people would, you know, love to put them up, you know, some.
Oh, they do, yes. A lot of people, quite often I get requested to take pictures. Would you take some pictures of me? I want to put them on MySpace. Now everybody wants pictures on MySpace.com. So I do those. I do a lot of those for people. I don't do much in the neighborhood of, in the area of pose photography. I don't have a studio, and I don't really enjoy that as much as I do.
You take the action shots.
I like
shots.
I like to take the pictures when things are going on. And
well, but a lot of your stuff is in Outsmart, and those are sort of posed pictures.
Yes. Obviously, people will pose the minute they see the camera, practically. So.
Yes.
Yes, and then Greg and Tim and Teresa and Jack and all that group are so wonderful, and Thomas, and you know, they sometimes say, would you take pictures of this, that, and the other. Tim had asked me to do the ones of you and Maria in the ICOH, so we did those, and yeah, all those people, and Nancy, they're all just wonderful. And Nancy did a story about me on, and the Houston Voice before she went back to Outsmart, which was a wonderful article as well. And I enjoy it because that was about my teaching at San Jacinto College and receiving the probably the highest teaching award in the state, the Minnie Piper Award. So
now you've recently retired, right?
Okay, retired from full-time teaching. San Jacinto College had a buyout and half-year salary, and so I thought this would be a good time to retire because I spent so much time with photography, and I thought that if I can break even with photography with my retirement, I think I can survive anyway. But I still teach part-time on occasion. In January, I taught a class, a Comp 1 class for the automotive students. In October, I'm scheduled to do another 8 week, but I can do 8 weeks, 2 hours, 3 days a week, and it works really fine because, as I say, Joan Allen, Betty, and Ann Thomas and all that group of students in college are just, they are my family, so then we go to lunch and things like that. So I'll try to probably teach 2 8-week courses a year, but that's as much as I want to teach because I don't even have time to get these on my website.
Sure, absolutely.
And that, I have people helping me.
Right, and but you also work with some other people. I mean, mostly you're out there, but occasionally...
Oh, I do. Yes, I do. Carlos Reyes helps me some. Christopher Ballin has been very helpful. And another one or two, I'll say, would you shoot some pictures for me? When I can't do... The most events I've done, I think, in one night was 8. I did 8 on one,
wow.
On Saturday evening, starting at 7 p.m. and ending at, I think, 5 a.m. the next morning. But usually 2 or 3 or 4 or 5, and many times I can't do it. And if I'm going out of town, which I'm hoping to do this Friday for 3 days of East Texas, Buena, where I'm from, a little town in East Texas, then I'll ask Carlos and Christopher, would you take pictures of this, please? And they each have one of my other cameras, so...
And we're talking to Dalton DeHart, who's the community photographer. Now, how would people, if you need more events to cover, but how do people get in touch with you?
Okay, they can, if they Google Dalton, they'll come up with all these possibilities, and then if they go to DaltonDeHart.com, it's got all my contact information. Email is just Dalton@DaltonDeHart.com. Also in Outsmart magazine, about 3 pages in from the back page, I have an ad in there about that. I also have another website that people don't really know about much yet, which is htowntoday.com. Well, I've got someone helping me do that, so that'll be strictly listings of everything going on in the community. So I'm hoping within a week they can go to htowntoday.com and look and see things that I know about going on for the next maybe 2 years. Every time somebody plugs something in, I'll get it put on H-Town Today, and then they just call me, 713-622-2202. My number is published, and I get calls all the time, 713-622-2202, which is a very easy number to remember. So but just ask me any time.
Well, Dalton, you're an absolute treasure to the community.
Well, thank you so much.
And you know, I was just sort of taken aback when you said you withdrew from running for Grand Marshal this year because my name was on the ballot, and I was just like, you know, first of all, you didn't have to do that, and
no.
You know, you're everywhere in the community, and the fact that for so long we've been invisible, you know, that you're taking pictures is really a step forward in our community that we now have this history.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a great, great thing. So DaltonDeHart.com, if you'd like some more information or see some of the pictures that Dalton has taken. Dalton, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, and thank you, and GCAM will get all the others. Judy has done a great job, and I appreciate it.
Okay.
And thank you.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
Since we broke up, all I do is cry. I miss the warmth and the soulful eyes. My heart aches right to the core, but it's not you I'm pining for. I miss the dog more than I miss you. she sees me, she jumps up and down. She has a cute smile, better than your frown. When I need her, she always comes through. She thinks I'm perfect, unlike you do.
Time that, you know, she's a, well, actually she did this a lot, jumped the fence, and we'd have to get her out of doggy jail, and then she dug that huge crater out in the backyard, and it rained for a week, and it filled with mud, and you fell in, and do you remember the time she ate 6 bagels off the kitchen counter, and had gas for a week? I miss that. I miss the dog. You. She's glad to see me. For you, that's not true. Oh, how I miss that cute little mutt. Her kiss is sweet if she hasn't licked her butt.
Yeah, what's up? I'm gonna take you with mine, you know? Yo, Slim, can I take it? Here we go. Well, it's time to make that change. People of the world today are fading. All of us have our ups and downs. You better think about it or you won't be around. What we need is a little...
I was spotted by a man walking down the shopping street in Manchester. He'd asked me if I wanted to play basketball. And again, I always say this, I mean, to this date, I still don't know why I said yes.
If I'm ever truly in need, would you rescue me?
Girl, white file, collagen lips, bleach blood clear, blue contact lens.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Queer Canadian and Swedish groups consult at the UN. Three artists debut in the audiophile and up close and personal with basketball's Man in the Middle. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 28, 2007. Both the International Lesbian and Gay Association and the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission reported this week that the United Nations Economic and Social Council, or ECOSOC, has granted UN consultative status to two more LGBT organizations. ECOSOC accreditation allows such NGOs or non-governmental organizations to attend UN meetings, submit written statements, and make oral presentations. Canada's Coalition Gay et Lesbienne du Québec and RFSL, the Swedish Federation for Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Rights, were each accepted by comfortable margins in a vote by the full council, which overruled its NGO committee recommendations to reject them. ECOSOC consists of 54 rotating member states of the United Nations, drawn from the five UN regions, Africa, Asia, Latin America, Eastern Europe, and the West. For the first time, states from all five regions voted to accredit the two LGBT organizations. Delegates from Canada, Brazil, Portugal, and Norway each spoke strongly in their support. Three LGBT NGOs gained ECOSOC consultative status in December 2006. The Danish National Association for Gays and Lesbians, the European branch of the International Lesbian and Gay Association, and Germany's Lesbian and Gay Federation. Australia's Coalition of Activist Lesbians and the U.S.-based International Wages Due Lesbians have had consultative status at the UN for several years. A number of additional LGBT groups are expected to submit applications for consultative status to ECOSOC's NGO committee in January.
Iranian refugees and the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, or IGLHRC, are reporting that some of the 16 people hanged last week in Tehran may have been executed for being gay. Islamic law forbids all sexual acts outside of heterosexual marriage. IGLHRC noted that Iran's sodomy laws are grouped together with rape, sexual assault, incest, and sexual abuse of children, thereby conflating crimes of sexual violence with acts of non-procreative sex. It's therefore impossible to know for certain if any of the executed men had only engaged in consensual adult sex, or if they'd committed additional sodomy offenses, such as rape or sexual child abuse. Two Iranian teenagers charged with engaging in homosexual acts were publicly hanged on July 19, 2005, provoking worldwide outrage. Small demonstrations outside Iranian embassies were held this month in Santiago and Moscow on the anniversary of those hangings and to protest the latest executions. According to IGLHRC, the latest morals crackdown is being used to create fear and to discredit increasingly vocal critics of the regime.
British-based human rights activist Peter Tatchell this week called claims that two reggae dancehall stars had not signed an agreement to stop performing homophobic hate music absurd. The Reggae Compassion Act reads in part, "We do not encourage nor minister to hate, but rather uphold a philosophy of love, respect, and understanding towards all human beings as the cornerstone of reggae. We agree to not make statements or perform songs that incite hatred or violence against anyone from any community." Buju Banton became notorious for his 1992 song, Boom Bye Bye, which advocates shooting gay men in the head, pouring acid on them, and burning them alive. His management team told a Jamaica radio station this week that he had not, in fact, signed the pledge, as recently reported. Beanie Man, who with fellow reggae performers Sizzla and Capleton reportedly signed the pledge last month, has also denied signing it, telling the Jamaica Observer newspaper that it was a fabrication of profit-hungry European promoters. "We're not sure whether this is a case of spin by their management or a genuine recantation," said Tatchell. He told reporters that reggae promoter Eddie Brown knows the artists and had flown to Jamaica to get their signatures. "We have total confidence in Eddie Brown," he said, adding that the signatures have been authenticated as genuine. Tatchell noted that copies of the agreement signed by both Beanie Man, whose real name is Anthony Davis, and Buju Banton, real name Mark Myrie, are posted on his website. The three-year-long Stop Murder Music campaign, targeting numerous offenders, has resulted in the cancellation of several concerts and sponsorship deals around the world. Gay sex is illegal in Jamaica, and violence against LGBT people is pervasive. JFLAG, the Jamaica Forum for Lesbians, All Sexuals, and Gays, has heartily endorsed the campaign. Tatchell said that four others identified as Jamaica-based murder music performers, Elephant Man, T.O.K., Bounty Killa, and Vibes Cartel, have thus far refused to sign on to the Reggae Compassion Act.
Meanwhile, police in Nepal's capital of Kathmandu have admitted targeting effeminate males and transgender people, both known as metis, for the apparent crime of carrying condoms. Members of Nepal's LGBT Blue Diamond Society and a visiting activist from the New York-based Human Rights Watch filed a formal complaint about the beatings and arrests of several metis in Ratna Park in mid-July. Police sub-inspector Pardeep Chand reportedly informed them that, "We found metis carrying condoms, and the metis also told us that they use condoms while having anal or oral sex, so it's our regular campaign to control metis inside the park and elsewhere." According to Blue Diamond's account of the events, officers approached the metis, threatened to shoot them if they tried to flee, punched, kicked, and clubbed them, searched their pockets, found money, and accused them of prostitution and of engaging in unnatural and illegal sexual activities. The metis were reportedly held for several hours in two police vans before being released.
Police in Rome detained two gay men for kissing outside the Colosseum this week and accused them of lewd conduct, sparking outrage from human rights groups and calls for an apology from an Italian government minister. The men, in their 20s, were taken to a police station for several hours before being released, according to the queer rights group Archie Gay, which called on LGBT people to gather near the Colosseum on August 2nd for a protest kiss-in. Police Colonel Alessandro Casarsa told the Reuters news service that, faced with an obvious violation of the norms that govern a place visited by thousands of people, the two were written up and let go. Italy's health minister, Livia Turco, expressed embarrassment over the incident. "Things like this certainly don't happen in a normal country," she said. "I hope that these boys are given an apology because this was a bit excessive."
Spanish authorities announced this week that they'll review the case of a judge who ordered a woman to choose between her daughters and her lesbian partner, according to a report by the Associated Press. Judge Fernando Farin Calamita of Murcia last month awarded custody of the two young girls to their father, who filed for divorce after allegedly finding his wife in bed with her female lover, because it was proved that the mother is a lesbian. In his ruling, the judge also said that a homosexual environment is prejudicial to children and notably increases the risk that they too become homosexual. But the Spanish Federation of Gays, Lesbians, Transsexuals, and Bisexuals disputed that discredited claim, noting that the law states that the custody of a child should be decided independently of the sexual orientation of the parent. According to Britain's Pink News website, Judge Calamita has also crusaded from the bench against topless swimming and nudists. Sylvia Hyen, Secretary General of the Spanish Federation, told reporters that the judge can think what he wants, but he can't dictate rules that go against the law.
In other news, gay and lesbian couples lined up by the dozens to register as domestic partners under a new law that took effect this week in the U.S. state of Washington. Registered domestic partners will get rights to hospital visitation, the ability to authorize autopsies and organ donations, and inheritance rights when there is no will. But those are a far cry from all the rights legally married gay and lesbian couples enjoy in Massachusetts, and the Washington registry falls considerably short of civil unions created for same-gender couples in a handful of other states.
The Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court upheld an antiquated state law in March, originally enacted to prevent interracial marriage, that bans couples who live in another state from marrying in Massachusetts if the marriage would not be legally recognized in their home state. But Massachusetts officials announced last week that same-gender couples from New Mexico who want to marry in their state may legally do so, because New Mexico is one of only two states whose laws don't explicitly limit marriage to a man and a woman. The other is Rhode Island. Equality New Mexico celebrated the announcement, but cautioned that while their state offers limited domestic partnership rights to its lesbi-gay residents, some but not all businesses, the state, and others may refuse to honor Massachusetts marriages, along with the federal government. Couples must be prepared to live with a level of uncertainty while we continue our work to end marriage discrimination.
And finally, a court ruling in Southern California's Orange County this week demonstrates how marriage inequality can also hurt heterosexuals. A judge ordered a man to continue paying alimony to his former wife, even though she's now in a registered domestic partnership with another woman, because under California law, alimony ends only when a former spouse remarries. The judge said that a registered partnership is not a marriage and that the man must keep writing monthly checks to his ex-wife. The California Supreme Court is considering challenges by the city of San Francisco and other plaintiffs to the state law that bars same-gender couples from legally marrying. The Attorney General's office has defended the law, arguing that gays and lesbians already enjoy the rights of marriage under California's various domestic partnership laws. But San Francisco's Chief Deputy City Attorney Therese Stewart told reporters that the alimony ruling highlights the irrationality of having a separate, unequal scheme for same-gender couples.
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 28, 2007, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
There's a sporting chance you'll learn something new about a lesbian and a gay man who've each championed queer visibility on their respective courts of public opinion later in the program. But first, three debut artists explore adversity, boundary crossing, and bleached blonde hair in this month's Audiophile.
Baby girl, how you been? At the spot with your friends. Same old thing you told me then. Didn't live to lie again. What they say is true. The mirror can be very cruel. Everything you've done to me, you know I did it too. Girl, and it's sad all the time that we waste. Making others believe we're okay. Just
the debut album by San Francisco artist Joshua Cliff is called Won't Stop Now. Hi, I'm Chris Wilson.
I'm J.D. Doyle, and you're listening to Audiophile. Joshua is a trans man, and that journey influenced his music.
This album is called Won't Stop Now because I had to risk everything to get here, and now that I'm here, I'm only getting started. I began gender transitioning knowing that it might result in never being able to sing again. But here I am 3 years later with my new album, and the music kind of crosses boundaries just like I live my life. And throughout it, there's a message of hopefulness. And every time someone says to me, Josh, your music changed my life, I know I've done my job in this world as an artist.
You're the guy that I see. He's the guy that was once so naive. Never saw the real you until the day that I saw me. Don't survive us too thick and too thin. Not the type of person to give in. No, I'm asking myself, on you can I depend? If I lost myself, would you help to find me? I got my way home, would you remind me? Don't get me wrong, I'll be fine on my own. But if I'm ever truly in need, would you rescue me?
Find out more about Joshua Cliff and his album, Won't Stop Now, at www.joshuacliff.com. That's www.joshuacliff.com.
A beauty mark, it's the less I've seen. A fake big tan to the extreme. She'll make it pop like bubble gum. One glance and you'll go dumb. Make believe all reality. Yeah. Or is it something that I see on TV?
See like a picture. That she ain't real.
From Houston, Josh Duffy brings us his first album, called Artificial.
Well, the name of the CD is Artificial, but there's really nothing artificial about it. Like, when you hear the word artificial, you might think that there's dance and electronic music, but really the CD is very eclectic. There's pop, rock, acoustical stuff, orchestral stuff. And it really has a lot of flavors running throughout it, and really describes who I am, even my crazy bleach blonde hair.
Well, you were cool, yeah, I thought you were cool. Guess I thought wrong. But that's okay, didn't need you anyway. But thank you for this song. I kept in touch, waited patiently for you to get back to me. Well, my intention was a misconception. Now I'm back to being me. Yeah, now the phone's off hook, so I won't answer. But you never come back.
You can get more information about Josh Duffy and his album Artificial at www.joshduffyonline.com.
Canadian band The Clicks have gotten a lot of exposure lately, with their music being featured on The L Word, and they're appearing on the True Colors tour.
Take your pain away, it's what you had to do. So fall on through to emotion.
The debut album by The Clicks is called Snake House. And lead singer Lucas Silveira tells us that it sprang from a period of adversity.
Steakhouse is a collection of songs that I ended up writing after the end of a 6.5-year long relationship. And after that time, a series of bad things happened to me. And at the same time, I started coming to terms with the fact that I was transgendered. And all these experiences together, I created the album.
Find out more about Snakehouse, the debut album by The Clicks, at www.theclicks.com. That's www.theclicks.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at Post Office Box 66648, Houston, Texas 77006, or by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiofile.org.
Audiophile is produced by J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and Christopher David Trenton. I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson. Keep listening.
Martina Navratilova, tennis phenomenon, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Martina was born in Czechoslovakia in 1956. With her early interest in tennis, she won the Czech National Championship at age 15. She defected to the U.S. in 1975, and in 1981, she came out to the whole world, making her the most highly visible lesbian sports celebrity ever. Martina once said, quote, "If I had to do it all over again, there's only one thing I would change. I would have come out earlier." With her exceptional strength and speed, she's broken records all over the globe. She holds the world record of 167 singles titles, including 9 straight Wimbledons. In 2006, after being inducted into the U.S. Open Court of Champions, she retired her racket. But she continues to use her fame to advance various GLBT causes. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Dustin Richardson.
My name is Billy Beane, and I was a Major League Baseball player from 1986 to 1995. I started with the Detroit Tigers. I played for the Los Angeles Dodgers and the San Diego Padres. I am gay. And you're listening to a show that hits it out of the park every week. This Way Out Radio Magazine.
At 6'11", John Amici never had a problem standing out. Coming out was a bit more challenging. Born in the U.S. and raised in Britain, the now-retired National Basketball Association center made headlines earlier this year as the first male pro basketball player to tell the world about his homosexuality. This Way Out correspondent Ralph Radabaugh chatted with Amici in Los Angeles about his best-selling autobiography, Man in the Middle.
You were born in Massachusetts, but you moved back to Manchester when you were 4. Now, as you said in your book, you weren't really athletically inclined, naturally. You were tall, but a little overweight, and it wasn't until you were 17 years old that you started with basketball. How did that...
Complete serendipity, really. I mean, complete luck and chance. I was spotted by a man walking down the shopping street in Manchester. And a couple of men actually stopped me and they asked me if I wanted to play basketball. And again, I always say this, I mean, to this date, I still don't know why I said yes. Not because I didn't like basketball at that point, because I had no experience with it. And certainly every experience prior to starting basketball with sport had been a negative one for me. Too much confrontation, too much, you know, I was the biggest target on the field in rugby, if you can imagine. For some reason, basketball seemed like a viable option for me, even though I knew nothing about it. So when I started, it was just a completely fresh leaf for me.
I was going to say, not a very big sport in England, is it?
It's growing, and it's immensely popular in terms of the groundswell of interest from young people. It just doesn't have any infrastructure, so it's almost like an underground sport is in this country.
It's much more popular now because of yourself?
I plan playing a small part, a small but I think significant part in increasing its popularity and trying to create the infrastructure. One of the biggest problems with basketball in England is that, unlike here, it's not an accessible sport for young, impoverished people. It's a sport that almost requires your family to have a certain level of income for you to find the right places. It costs you money to play basketball. It can cost from £3 to £5 to £8, which is, that's $16 for one session of basketball in England.
So there's not a lot of outdoor courts, is what you're saying?
Well, we've got outdoor courts. It's just that, in a country where you get 300 days of rain, outdoor courts aren't that practical. So, my charity is working to build community hubs and sports centres. So we've got one in Manchester. We've got between 5,000 and 7,000 kids a week going through our doors right now. So we're very, very proud of that. Not just from the sports perspective, because, frankly, sports on its own just aren't that important. But to bring kids together, to put them in an environment where they get to learn, be challenged, compete, and be involved with mentors and adult figures who really care about them, I think is important.
Not have to pay $16 to get in and play.
Exactly. I don't believe in ghettoization of the sport. I don't want it to be just something that only poor people want to play, but I want it to be something that every person, no matter their socioeconomic status, will have access to.
Now, you had a serious injury to your wrist, which affected the way you played basketball after that and actually worked. Was advantageous, as it turned out. What was that all about?
Well, I got to say, I don't recommend it as a strategy for improving your basketball skills, but I did chop my right hand off almost completely. Every tendon, every artery, every nerve, everything on the dorsal, the top side of my right hand, was cut. And because of that, I spent 8 months in a cast and then another 4 months in a, I don't know what you call it, but a contraption that stretches my ligaments out. And I had very cutting-edge surgery at that time, on the National Health Service, may I add. And they really took care of me. And because of that, I ended up with a right hand that I use reasonably well, but a left hand that I'm very, very adroit with. So.
No, is it true you're one of the few basketball players that can play equally as well with both hands, or almost equally as well?
Yeah, it's a rarity for sure. I don't think it pulls me up the rank of good players in this country, but certainly it's a rarity to be able to go both ways, so to speak.
You had a really good support network with your mother, and I'd imagine your sisters too. And your father wasn't really involved a lot in mm-hmm. your childhood. He was from Nigeria.
Yes.
And went back to Nigeria when you were very young, right?
Yes. Well, I think actually, more properly, my mother and I and my two sisters, we left. She took us away because she felt that we would be safer and happier going back to England, have a better chance at a better life there than in America with my father. So we moved away from him and then spent quite a few years making sure that we were safe from him. My mother did. And I've got to be honest, I never felt wanting. I know that there were days when I and my sisters, we ate and my mother didn't. I know there were days when she got no sleep whatsoever because she was working two or three jobs. But she was more than parent enough for us three.
Tell us a little bit more about her. She was a real inspiration, and she was a doctor. She put herself through medical school. And
mm-hmm. And the good part is that she wasn't natural, which I think is something that is very significant to me, because in basketball, I'm not a natural. As you said earlier, I don't even like to sweat, really. And I certainly don't do much in the way of exercise nowadays. But she wasn't a natural, and she failed her medical entrance exams the first time round. And then she had to scramble and do them again in order to get into university. And then she couldn't go to the university she wanted. She ended up going up to Aberdeen, which, for those people who don't know the geography of England and Scotland, it's way, way up there. It's a freezing. They call it the Granite City because it's that grey. And all the time it was a slog for her. All the time it was a chore. But she still pulled it through because she felt that the end result, the big picture of that, would be valuable. And the fact is, she became an amazing doctor, to the point where the only place really in the world that I go, and people don't know me for either my book or my basketball career, is Cheadle, where she practiced medicine. And I walk around Cheadle, and to this day, people come up to me and they grab me by the cheek and they say, "Oh, you're Dr. M.H.'s son." So it makes me quite proud.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially when you consider that we are now two generations away from the people that she took care of. So the people who are coming up to me now are actually the children of the people that she ministered to and she helped as a doctor. So her legacy is really strong.
His mother's inspiring example propelled former U.S. pro basketball player John Amici through his collegiate and National Basketball Association careers. He tells Ralph Radabaugh how that inspiration also paved the way for his post-retirement work as a gay activist.
Coming out doesn't have to be shouting it from the rafters, though as I always say, it would be a glorious noise if everybody did.
Next time on This Way Out. Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Sherry Lund, Christopher Gall, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle and Christopher David Trentum, Judd Proctor and Brian Burns with Dustin Richardson, and Ralph Radabaugh contributed program material. Thanks also to Steve Fried. Joshua Klipp, Josh Duffy, and the Clicks performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Listen online to...
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Tour de Pink is back. On Sunday, September 9, Pink Ribbons Project will host its third annual fundraising bicycle ride, Tour de Pink 2007. Cyclists will raise money for Pink Ribbons Project, In Motion Against Breast Cancer. Contributions and pledges will fund awareness and education programs, mammograms for underserved women, and other outreach programs. Last year, over 1,000 riders registered and rode. This year, it's another family-friendly event with routes from 12 to 100 miles. It starts and ends on the Prairie View A&M University campus near Hempstead. So grab your bikes and join us Sunday, September 9 at 7:30 a.m. on the start line. To register or volunteer, visit tourdepink.org on the web. That's tourdepink.org. Or call 713-524-7465. See you there. KPFT, Houston.
On August 4th, 2007, at 9 p.m. at the Howling Wolf on FM 1969, the Calvin Owens Blues Orchestra, along with Sawdust Alley Music Preservation Foundation, will present the official CD release party, hosted and sponsored by the Houston Blues Society and KPFT. Sawdust Alley will be introducing to the world a new genre of music, blues in Spanish, with Miss Evelyn Rubio, La Mujer Que Canta Blues. The Calvin Owens Show, Volume 3, Houston is the Place to Be, will hit the charts with a bang. All of these artists will be performing: Ms. Barbara Lynn, Pete Mays, Ms. Evelyn Rubio, Lou Davis, and Ms. Tweed Smith. You all know the party is on. You must be there. Get your new CDs fresh at the show. A portion of the proceeds will go to KPFT Radio, as they are listener sponsored. For info, call 713-529-8275 or visit their website at www.calvinowens.com.
From KPFT 90.1.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.